What's up, y'all? Welcome to Conversation Piece with Patrick Armstrong. I am the titular Patrick, and this is a show where we talk about the missing pieces of the conversations we're already having. Shout out to our returning listeners, and a high five and hello to everybody joining us for the very first time here in 2024, the year of the nap. And I don't mean sleep. My guests today are in Indianapolis with their new book, Adoption Unfiltered, Revelations from Adoptees, Birth Parents, Adoptive Parents, and Allies, available wherever you get your books, specifically your local bookstores. It is an honor for me and a privilege to welcome Sarah Easterly, Kelsey Vandervliet Ranyard, and Lori Holden to the show. Thank you all for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. We're so happy to be here.
Thanks for having us here.
Absolutely. How are y'all doing? You're on the second leg of this book tour, Last City. What are you feeling right now? How are you doing? You literally just got out of the car from Chicago and walked into the studio.
Well, I think we're probably all going to have different answers for this, but, there's a part of me that's super tired. And then there's also a part of me that's like feeling all the sadness because it's been so much fun being in each city and just having the face-to-face conversation. There's been a lot of Adoptee Voices writers and just a lot of adoptees that I've been in community with online. And then the in-person is just so meaningful. And so I've got the sadness about that and the sadness about, you know, it's fun to be on book tour and talking about this project. You know, writing is such a solitary act and you're doing it alone. And then to get to share it with the world is like a just real buzzy feeling. So it's a whole bunch of mixed feelings, kind of like adoption.
Kind of like just our lives in general.
Yeah, mixed we know feelings. That.
How are y'all doing?
I feel like if we weren't ending on Indianapolis, I would be more tired than I am, but I'm really like energized for Indianapolis despite having like no sleep.
Okay.
Because I have such a huge community here. And so personally, our last book tour in November, December, we ended on Denver and I didn't know anyone there. And it was a great event and I met a lot of great people, but I think there's no place like home. And so I'm really ready to see like so many family, friends and colleagues and just, you know, and also meet new people in this area as well. But I love the Midwest and I'm just excited to be back. So
love it.
And Denver was my hometown.
Okay.
And so I was exhilarated at the end of that one. And I'm exhilarated now. But like Sarah said, it's a both and. I'm also exhausted. And it's been so much fun. Each of these eight cities we've been to after tonight, we have a different panel. We have a panel in every city based on people that we know in those cities who either contributed to our book or endorsed our book or have been involved in adoption reimagining. And so the flavor in each city is different. And always so excellent. And so that's the exhilarating part is I'm so curious what's going to come out tonight. And I'm so exhilarated about what came out last night and the two nights before.
I know. I wish we could do a 3-hour podcast so I can hear about all of these different panels, because when I see the people that are on them, I'm like, okay, I know this person and this person and this person. And some people I've been able to have a conversation with yet. And I'm like, oh, I just want to know what you had to say. Like, I want to know and just learn from you. So I'm excited for the event tonight, and we'll get into that in a little bit. But for folks who don't know y'all, I introduced you by name, I introduced the book, but for folks listening, watching out there, do you mind sharing just a little bit more about yourselves? And we'll start with Sarah.
Okay. So I'm an adoptee. I'm the adoptee of us. We like to talk about how we cross generations. So I represent Gen X proudly. And then I represent adoptees. And I'm the founder of Adoptee Voices Writing Groups, which I started, we're going into our fourth year. I started that shortly after the publication of my memoir, Searching for Mom. And I've been a writer for, gosh, since I was a kid, but a part of writing groups for probably 25 years. And I just kept kind of feeling like I wanted to support other adoptees in their storytelling. Being on the other side of getting my book out, there's just so much that I can let go of now that the story's out there. And so that's really important to me to support other adoptees. And then it was right around the same time that I was starting Adoptee Voices that that I found Lori and Kelsey and we started this project. So at a high level, I guess one other thing you should know about me is that when I became a new parent. All my adoption got cracked open. you're ahead of things because you already were looking at adoption before parenting, but I wasn't really. And so it affected me in a huge way going through pregnancy. And I had this story that pregnancy didn't matter and babies didn't matter. I kind of wanted to just give myself that reinforcement. But of course, that's not what I kept feeling and experiencing. So it changed my, rewrote all my, these life stories that I'd been telling myself in a really significant way. So I started, I knew I had, I didn't have consciousness yet, but I knew that I wanted to parent my kids differently than I was parented. I didn't have the words. And really what it came down to is I had attachment wounds that, yeah, obviously, like we can laugh now. Like, yeah, right. Sarah.
I know. I don't mean to laugh, but I only laugh because I know those exact wounds.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, okay, hello. Yeah. And so I got into studying attachment and child development. I just dove right in and it was kind of this, all my trauma response perfectionism that I'd had my whole life, I applied to parenting and I was going to be this perfect parent and not get anything wrong. And I was kind of doing, you know, learning attachment for that reason. But then as I'm learning about attachment, I'm having all these ahas of, whoa, now I understand my adoption. And now I understand how this is related to adoption and all the separation that we face throughout our lives and really impact and, you know, just understanding and unpacking that in a whole new way. So it was life-changing for me. It reframed so much. And it's a big part of, I became a course facilitator and it's a big part of my mission is to help adoptees understand themselves and to help others understand us too and to normalize us a little bit. So
I appreciate you sharing that. When you say you dove right in, you literally dove right in. I resonate so hard with it because that's exactly what I did. It was just like, oh, the switch is flipped and there is no flipping it back off. Yeah. Like and now I just have to keep going. So thank you so much for sharing. Kelsey?
Hi. So I'm Kelsey Vanderbilt Ranyard. I'm a birth mom. The three of us, I'm the millennial and, not derogatory.
And, I'm a millennial too. So
yeah. So it's solidarity. But yeah, so I am the policy and advocacy director at Ethical Family Building in Los Angeles. I live in Northern California, but I'm from Northern Indiana. And my adoption story, my personal adoption story is quite newer than anyone else in this little, you know, quote unquote triad of us.
For a reason. That's good.
Yeah. And so I placed my son for adoption in 2016 here in Indiana. But in addition to that, my dad is an adoptee and his birth mom was an adoptee. And my whole life I've been living in reunion with his birth mom because they reunited shortly before I was born. And they've just were introduced to me as my family, just like any other family member. Of course, there's more complex dynamics to that, which I grew up observing and being confused by, but then understanding and doing that whole process. But so adoption really has affected my whole life. But those intergenerational effects didn't really become apparent to myself or my family until my experience with relinquishment. And I think, and Lori asked me the other day, like how, what did you say, Lori? You asked me like, compared to your family, like I'm much more emotionally in tune. So it was like, how was that, you know, reckoning with that and having your family reckon it? And I think my answer to you was like, it didn't occur to me to do it any other way. And so that's just like who I am at my core. And I was like, everyone's going to look at this with me. I'm in pain and you're going to look at it. And we're all living amongst me. So we're all going to participate in this. And so it's the same concept that you were just talking about. It's the point of no return.
Right.
Like you can't just unlearn everything that you've just awoken to, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah. So I work in adoption reform policy now. And I work on federal legislation, state legislation. I pursue enforcement with state attorneys general or licensing boards. I do media relations, all of that. And then I am the co-host of the first ever Birth Mom podcast with Ashley Mitchell, the Twisted Sisterhood podcast. So that's on its third season.
Love it. Yeah. Absolutely love it. I was just listening to it before we or before I got in here. And yeah, I thought that was one of the things that really stood out to me was you talking about being part of four generations of adoption. And like you said, you know, there are threads there from everyone in your family. And when you went through it, it's like, okay, I'm going to pull on all these threads and y'all come with me anyways, whether you want to or not. Yeah. So here we go. So thank you for sharing that. I'm excited to dig in. And Lori.
That would leave me as the boomer. But I will say I'm at the very tail end. So my name is Lori Holden, and I'm an adoptive mom, and that's my contribution to this effort, all of our projects. My husband and I adopted through because of infertility almost 23 years ago. Our daughter is about to turn 23. Our son just turned 21. And so I am fairly new in this space as well. I didn't grow up being adopted or watching adoptee spaces. There weren't spaces back then, but I got a crash course because, like Sarah, I wanted to be the best adoptive parent I could be, and fell into a really easy open adoption with my daughter's birth mom, and that extended to her birth dad and then later my son's birth parents. And there was no guidebook, and so my daughter's birth mom and I decided we would try to write that guidebook. So I wrote it, included a lot of her perspectives in it. And all along the way, I kept learning other perspectives, adoptees and birth parents, because all I really knew was the adoptive parent perspective, which was woefully inadequate. And then I also wanted to share what I was learning with those behind me. So our first effort was the book, The Open-Hearted Way to Open Adoption. And my kids continued to develop and grow and get into really hard parenting things. And so through their teen years, I started podcasting with Adoption the Long View and really exploring things with other adoptees, birth parents, and adoptive parents who had done some critical thinking and been farther on, along the road than I was. And then, you know, meeting Sarah, and maybe we'll tell you how things came together, but all along the way, for about 17 years, I've been writing on my blog, lavenderlose.com. And you know, when blogging was kind of a thing, the comment section was a place where we really hashed out ideas and found the flaws in our thinking. And in those early days, that was such a treasure place, hearing from birth parents, hearing from adoptees, as I started figuring out what my kids would really need from me in a ways that I needed to show up for them. So I've benefited from a lot of emotional labor from other people. And so I always try to share their words, as make it last, make it go far.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that. And I appreciate the work that you have done in real time and then shared that very publicly. I also think it's very interesting that you talk about the comment sections of your blog being a safe space to like learn and have good discussion. Yeah. When I think about comments now, I'm like, oh, this is dangerous and I'm not going to go in there.
Yeah.
This is a mess.
On Facebook, I mean, Facebook changed it. But there was like a code of ethics when you were on somebody else's front porch and you wouldn't, you know, throw eggs at them on their front porch comment section.
Right. Yeah.
Well, some people would.
I threw some eggs here in Indiana, in the small town Indiana. But you brought up, you know, how y'all came together. And I did want to ask, you know, how did this start? What brought y'all together? And then how did that lead into not only the podcast, but now the book?
Well, the comments is what brought us together. Mm-hmm. So I saw Lori taking some heat. She does tend to be, out of the three of us, I think you get a lot of heat. We all get our fair share, but you've gotten used to it. but Lori was getting some, you know, just by nature of her role in adoption, being an adoptive parent, and there's a lot of hurt, justifiably, from different, you know, wrongs and things that have happened before, and it tends to get projected, and we all know what that's like. We see it. But something was particularly really harsh, and I had been doing some writing on Lori's blog, and so I knew her. We had a relationship. I think at first I texted you, and then we ended up on the phone. I just wanted to check in. She's a human being. So I just started with, are you okay? How are you doing? And then we started talking, and we just had one of those conversations. We were just like, you know, why is it so hard to work together and reach across the aisles? Because we actually do need, there's power dynamics, yes. And we had to work through those and maneuver through those to do a 3-year project, 3-year plus project. But we also let's work through them. We are all adults now. We're adults in adoption. Let's be adults and work toward reform, work toward understanding, work to listen to each other and make some change, because we all can agree that there is change needed. So that's how we started. We kind of cheekily at the end of that long passionate call said, we should write a book together. You know, ideas are flowing.
It's always the joke of, oh, we should do this. And then 3 years later, oh, here it is.
Yep. So, yeah. And we also knew we wanted a birth mom. We were at a conference only a couple of months later. We heard Kelsey speaking and, you know, diversity is really important to us. So partly, you know, it's kind of fun to say the generational thing, but there is like thought behind that, that, you know, we appreciate the diversity we have in age and perspective. We appreciate that Kelsey is closer to having placed, and she was even closer 3 years ago. And so she knows the current landscape, and it's really important for all of us to know the current landscape because it is changing and evolving. And when you look at history of adoption, and you can see trends and follow them, but it's really important to stay current on what's going on. So, and immediately we saw that. We were at a conference, Kelsey was speaking, and Lori and I were texting within a couple minutes, like, I think she's the birth mom. Like, okay, we're going to write this book. We invited her to write the book and
she didn't say no.
Yeah. Didn't say no. How did it feel to be approached that way and be like, oh, hey, do you want to write a book together? We need a birth mom. I think it's so interesting that you came together first, because that's the way it goes, is like adoptee, adoptive parent. Those are the two pillars that you always hear about. And birth parents are always kind of the third wheel, so to say.
Yeah.
Like, how did that feel to get brought in and be asked that?
I have a hard time saying no to things. And so that's why I'm drowning all the time in projects. And so part of me, I think subconsciously, was like, yeah, they want to write a book. Sure. Maybe it'll happen. Maybe it won't. Yeah, I'll just say yes. Cause you know, but it worked out. Right. So, and it was a lot of work. I remember like at one point telling my husband, I was like, they want to meet with me every week. And I was like, this is way more work than I thought it was going to be. And I know, and I didn't ever think that writing a book wasn't going to be a lot of work, but I guess I didn't understand the seriousness of the proposal. And so, but no, and like we got down to it and here we are. But I think, yeah, 3 years ago, we also joke all the time. Well, joke, just reflect on like, when we first started having meetings, I had a 2-month-old and I had her in a sling on Zoom. And now she runs around the house like a chicken with her head cut off while we're on Zoom. So it's like, it's such a, 3 years makes a huge difference. And Patrick, like, you have a 1-month-old today. Like,
right.
It's, you know, in 3 years, let me know what your life looks like. Yeah.
I already feel like I'm drowning and stuff anyways.
Totally.
And before the baby was here. So now to have a child and to think that, oh, I'm going to take on a bunch more stuff. You know, I totally resonate with that. And you're not only, like, you have a bunch of projects, but you're doing policy work specifically. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. How does that, did you feel like there would be any conflict with doing that work and then stepping into this role as an author writing this particular book?
I think, like, all my projects kind of go together. Like, they're all in the same realm. I don't ever really find conflicts. I mean, I found it really convenient that we were just in DC so I could do Capitol Hill meetings. Nice. So it's just like, you know what I mean? Like, oh, I've got some time. But no, I feel like my pursuit towards reform is more well-rounded and comprehensive by this book. The ability and the privilege to be able to put down your words on paper and somebody reads them, whether they are a legislator or they are an adoptive parent or an adoptee or adoption professional or just an ally in society. I think that all contributes to, you know, the greater effort for reform. And we always say too in policy work that like you can change laws all day, but if you don't change hearts and minds, like the oomph behind that won't be there. And so you have to be doing both, and it's a balancing act. And so, I mean, this is doing both, you know?
Yeah, so, sure. Well, bringing that knowledge of policy, I think, is so important to narrative change. And I think, like you said, hearts and minds, that's what's really going to push things forward. And to be able to bring that perspective and then across generations, across different spectrums of where you fall into adoption and how you relate to it, I think makes so much sense. And it just informs, like you said, everything that you do. And so before we really dive into the meat of this, we've mentioned the book. We've talked about how you've come together to write the book. Can you give people who may not know a little overview of what the book specifically is?
Mm-hmm. Who wants to do it?
Who wants to do it?
Yeah. I'll start. We have structured our book into four parts. And the first part is called Adoptees Unfiltered. The second part is called Birth Parents Unfiltered. The third part is called Adoptive Parents Unfiltered. And then after we've kind of deconstructed and disintegrated all the filters and you're laying on the ground writhing in pain and guilt and all that, we have a fourth section on hope and healing. And Sarah's got two really great chapters in there for how parents can support adoptee maturation and how adoptees can journey home, her special message to adoptees. And then a third chapter in that section on, so what do we do now? We got to work on this on our at home micro level, but also some people will be called to do this on a more systemic macro level. Mm. So what's needed in the space? Maybe Sarah, you can talk a little bit about how we wanted to seek diversity and in our yeah. offerings.
So, you know, this is recorded. You can see us. We're three white women. And I said we're committed to diversity. And so, and that's not just in, we're not just talking generations. So we interviewed 50 people for the book. Really important to us to center adoptees first and foremost. And then close second to that is birth parents, because our voices just haven't been heard as much in that narrative as we mm-hmm. work against it. So 18 out of the 50, 23 adoptees and 18 birth parents. And then the balance of that were adoptive parents and allies. And we tried to get as much diversity as we could with the constraints of, you know, we could have kept going, but we had to write the book eventually.
Right.
but within that 50 number, so we were looking for racial diversity, diversity in age of adoptees and people we were interviewing, diversity in religious perspectives, intercountry, domestic, transracial or interracial, depending on your wording, same-sex adoptions, diversity in gender,
job welfare,
foster care. Yeah. Someone who aged out of foster care, chose not to be adopted. She did have an agency over that, but didn't want to lose ties to her mom, mm-hmm. even though the relationship was fraught. Someone who is twice relinquished. So anyway, and I could keep going on, but just as we were really committed to as much of a broad, a lot of perspectives. And then it was kind of the task at hand, and the way I saw it was taking, not to tell their stories, because that's theirs to tell. Of course, adoptee voices, I'm really passionate about that. but to synthesize what's the larger story of adoption and how do we pull this up? And the lens I have is through understanding attachment and separation. So for me, it was kind of, okay, all of this lines up and this is how we respond, how anxiety manifests and alarm, and this is how frustration manifests. And because it was really common, and it was like this amazing feeling just to be able to distill it like that.
Yeah. So. I loved how one of my favorite parts of the book is how each one of your sections continues to reference each other's, and y'all reference Sarah quite a bit. But you even reference both Kelsey and Lori and things that they talk about in their respective sections and tie it all together. And like you said, you know, you're not trying to tell other people's stories, but you're trying to the best of your abilities, paint as broad a picture, as comprehensive of a picture of adoption as you possibly can. And personally, having just recently finished the book, I feel like it really does do that. And I like at the beginning of the book, you also talk about, this is going to be challenging. And when I went into it, I don't know what I expected to be challenging for me, but as I read each of the different sections, particularly both the adoptive parent and the birth mother section, I did find myself challenged on certain things that I had not really thought about. And I told you before we got on mic that I blasted through your section. And it was because I felt like this was a perspective that I've heard of a little bit and heard mm-hmm. people talk about a little bit, but haven't really dove into. And it's really important for me right now, not only as a new parent, but because when I came back from Korea, I actually ended up being reconnected with my birth mother via email through a third party. And we have not officially connected yet because I've been trying to navigate that. Mm-hmm. And the reason I blasted through your section was because I was realizing and learning a lot of perspectives from what she might have been feeling mm-hmm. or felt or thought. And so it just really resonated with me. And then to have that tied into what my parents might think or what even I have been thinking has been really important, or was really important, to go through. And so that's what I really appreciate about the book, is that I feel like it challenged me in ways I didn't expect to be challenged.
Thank you for saying that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No,
that's very validating
book.
For the goals, one of our major goals for the book.
Yeah. And Sarah, you brought up power dynamics, which I feel like is something that you all touch on quite a bit. And it was something that really stuck out to me. And each of you in your respective sections brings it up in some form or fashion. So I wanted to ask, what does, and you talked about it even when you first met, like navigating those power dynamics, what does that look like when you are trying to navigate those during the writing process? Is it a level playing field? How do they shift? Do they change? What does that look like for y'all?
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope this is okay. I don't think I've ever said this, but I think, and I don't mean this to sound, is this going to sound, I don't know what we're going to say.
Yeah. Don't worry. We got our editing machine works. So
it was adoptee led. Like, I mean, I do think, and I have always, and I have said this, I've never felt so adoptee centered. So in the writing process, you know, I think you've both been fantastic listeners and deferring to me on lots of things, throughout the writing process. So that feels like it helps to elevate my power, you know,
sure.
That I'm not this perpetual child, and you're going to tell me what to do, or, you know, tell me how it's going to be. Like, I felt like I had the agency and the empowerment to do that. So, so that was a balancing of the power dynamics.
Yeah.
I think, you know, just in terms of the writing process, and power dynamics, how they played out, we have all kinds of stories. I'm just trying to cherry pick which one. I have a story about just getting ready for the book to come out. And we were working on a presentation that we were going to give. And as part of that, we had Google Slides up and we were typing in the notes, our ideas, and talking it through at the same time. We were on Zoom. And I was on one line, and right above me was Laura. You know how Google Slides are. And she was writing the exact same thing that I was writing. And I was super triggered. And I didn't know why, but I was just like, you know what? I got to go. Like, it was getting so bad that I felt like I have to get off the Zoom. Like, I didn't know why. And so, you know, an hour later, I'm like, oh, I felt like the adoptive parent in the room was speaking over me.
Like literally line by line. Yeah.
And so I was able to just tell Lori, I'm like, you know what? I don't think that doing that anymore is not my working style. I need to have the first pass. And then you can go look, you know, like, because it's adoptee led and we have a relationship where we can listen to each other. In terms of writing, I do want to say, it really means a lot what you said earlier about, that we were referring and stuff, because early on we outlined, we had our plan, we had our deadlines. We start, you know, Lori is really diligent in writing away, and Kelsey and I are more deadline driven. So we were waiting. And then Lori's ready for us to read her chapters. We were like, you know, and I was like, I can't read your chapter. She wanted me to read her chapter about attachment. And I'm like, everything I have to say is about attachment. So then I'm like, I can't read it yet. And so we had some of that to work out. Just, you know, it also felt like, again, she was getting ahead of me, and it's not, it's just how we each are, but we had to work through that a little bit. There was some of that. And then we also realized in that process that we can't just go in our silos and write our chapters separately, because we have to interact. And so that's not what we say we're coming together, but are we really coming together if we're just each writing our section and slapping it together? So then we really did have to, it was like, oh, okay, Sarah, like, you can't be a deadline driven writer right now. You have to actually have stuff for your colleagues here. They have to be able to interact and respond. And we had to go through that together.
For me, I when the power dynamics came out, and I guess just in general, just the dynamics of adoption when they became like replicated into our writing dynamics was more like, I remember telling them when we were writing our chapters, I was like running out of content, and I was kind of discounting my relevance to the constellation and to this project. And I was like, do I live adoption every day? Sure. But am I an adoptee who's being an adoptee every day? No. Am I an adoptive parent who's parenting an adoptee every day? No. I am living on the outside looking in. And sometimes I'm not looking in. Sometimes I'm trying to like keep my eyes on the road. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I told Sir and Lori, I was like, I don't even know, like, if I have anything more for you. And they were kind of like, okay, get it. They didn't say this to me, but this is how I took it. They was like, okay, get over yourself. You are important and you need to figure it out. And let's figure this out together. Like, what is it that more you can say? And then it turned out I had way more to say. And then I had trouble like condensing some of it because I was like, wait, there's a lot of actually there's, it's kind of seeping out of my pores now because we've really opened this box. And so, but yeah, I think that was, you know, a lot of times birth parents try to stay out of everybody's way.
Sure.
We don't want to burden you. We don't want to intrude. And so I felt that way when they were talking about the dynamics of the interactions with each other's part of the constellation. And I'm just sitting there like, well, I don't know any of that because that's not my experience. And I'm like, what is my experience? You know, what encapsulates that? So, that's how it really came out for me.
Well, then they gave you that little push and then it was like, oh, I've written too much now. And now how do I cut this back down?
Yeah.
You mentioned, before we go forward, you mentioned the constellation twice. Do one of you mind just defining that for folks who may not know?
Sure. Sarah, do you want to do that?
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, it's a term that we've all been gravitating to for quite, 6 or 7 years, maybe. You know, it basically, the way I would just at a high level say is an adoptee at the center and anyone the adoptee comes in contact with for their life or has been in contact with. So it's, you know, if you know an adoptee, you're in the constellation. We did illustrate it. It's in the book. It's on page 3. That was my New Year's Eve project and like on into New Year's. It was really fun to do. I'm a graphic, I do graphic design. I'm a really visual thinker. And I hadn't seen it anywhere. And I was like, we need to show this because it's bigger than you could imagine.
Yeah.
There's a lot to the constellation. So, it's on page 3 of the book. we have stickers. I wish I had brought them in to show you, and I'll give you one before we leave, Patrick.
Thank you.
It's basically, it's wide. It's a wide net.
Yeah.
So.
I love the illustration. It made me, I guess I wasn't thinking about it being illustrated, and I loved when I saw it because it does really like capture people and individuals that you wouldn't think would be involved. And like you said, you know, you write it in the book, there's like 100 million people, I think is the number, that are touched by adoption in some way. And the number is probably woefully undersold.
Yeah.
It's probably much, much
That's
wider.
A really old number.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Kelsey can speak to that, but, and everything, but, And I want to say, I just want to give a call out because I tapped into my network so big on that. Astrid Castro, who's one of my mentors and dear friends, and so many people just wanting to weigh in, like, who am I missing? Who am I missing? Kelsey, you know, we went through multiple rounds, the three of us, on, okay, just to get everybody we could think of and, yeah, get it pictured on that graphic. It's huge.
Well, that could fill a whole book itself. Is the constellation literally? Because it could almost be anyone, you know. Kelsey, one of the things that you shared, speaking of power dynamics, was this metaphor. I really, really liked it. It was in regards to the family gathering, like in the house. And this is kind of paraphrased, but you said adoptive parents would be at the adult table. Adoptees are at the kid table, no matter the age, and birth parents are on the porch looking through the window with the casserole that is going cold.
Such a Midwest reference.
It really was. I mean, that's probably why I resonated with it so much, especially the casserole. You know, that's very Midwest. But speaking of these power dynamics as a birth parent, how do you enter into the house, so to speak? Is it a waiting for an invitation type of thing, or is it I have a key already, I'm just going to walk in? Or do you just kick the door down, break the windows down, and just jump into the house? How do you get in?
So don't do that. however, I do think that my answer is different depending on who I'm talking to.
Sure.
When I'm talking to adoptive parents, I'm like, you have to open the door and invite them in. That's your job. When I'm talking to birth parents that have not been let in or have told they can't come in, I say keep knocking because you don't want to get to a point where your kid turns 18 or 25 or 40 and is looking for you. And you said, I gave up. I stopped knocking and I went home. I think I talk a lot in the book about our responsibility, and how it doesn't go away just because you terminated your parental rights legally. I think we have a moral, emotional duty to our children. And I know that any number of, you know, layers of trauma and complexities can complicate that. But I, generally speaking, I really do stand by that. And so, for birth parents who have been shut out, like, keep knocking. And also when it gets to the point where the adoptee is old enough and has a voice, and if they don't want you to keep knocking, then that's when you stop. It has to be led. You have to let your child do lead that.
Sure.
So if they tell you stop knocking, I understand that's really hard. And we can work through that, and that's a separate conversation. But yeah, you've got to respect that and stop knocking.
Yeah, and it doesn't necessarily mean that you can't ever come back to the
right.
door, or totally. That the door will be closed forever.
Totally.
It is, like you said, you know, it's just a thing that an adoptee themselves has to be able to choose and get to on their own, and that takes a lot of different moving parts. From an educational standpoint, whatever it might be, especially from a personal journey.
Yeah. And when adoptive parents, talking to adoptive parents too, like, not only do you have to open the door, invite them in, but take their coat and make them feel comfortable and feel at home and included. So, yeah.
Take that casserole, heat it up if it's been, gotten cold,
oven.
And then put it back on, put it on the table.
Yeah.
It's there to be served and to be had.
For sure.
I love that.
I just want to add to that too, just back to the adoptee, it's so often on the adoptee to do the opening and to do the inviting in adulthood, you know, especially, I'm speaking especially from those of us who've been in closed adoptions, that we have to do the opening and then we still don't, you know, we're still having to do opening, closing and keep living these separate lives. And so I do really appreciate the modeling that both of my co-authors do for other parents, because it really shouldn't be our job to be the, you know, I mean, yes, we can lead it. We should be in charge of that too, but we shouldn't, our parents should be doing that.
Yeah. Well, that's what I love about the book is that you talk about modeling. My wife and I talk about that a lot as we get or enter into this parenthood journey. And I feel like the book serves as a really good model for a lot of different things. Well, I think you said you have 50 interviewees, you know, I think a lot of different perspectives are represented here. And again, you say at the top of the book, like, this is not going to be all encompassing. It's impossible to be exhaustive because literally down to the individual, that experience is different. And so all we can do is cast a wide net and try to show as many people as we can with the knowledge and the caveat that there are more things out there, more people to learn from, more experiences to hear from. And Lori, one of the things that I liked what you wrote in your section, again, this topic of power dynamics is really stuck with me, probably because I just read the book and it's just like the thing that's been so fresh in my mind, but I love the way each of you approached it. And I actually think this might have been something that Kelsey wrote that you referenced, but you talked about how the balance of power shifts from birth parent to adoptive parent in an instant. I think you talked about the seesaw metaphor, I think, and that's what you had referenced there. And once that shift happens, it's imperative on the adoptive parent to use their power responsibly. I was going to use the Spider-Man quote, but I decided not to. I didn't write it down, so I'm not going to use it now. But I was wondering, from your perspective, you talk about it a little bit in the book, but is there a way to create a balancing of that power in all parties from the adoptive parent perspective? Is there... Because you already start, once that power shifts, you have all of it. And it's like, I think in the book as I was reading, I picked up on you know, you kind of dole it out as you're able to dole it out in whatever way that looks like. But is there a way to reach a balance? Is that even possible?
Yeah, and I think it is possible and it's necessary. And it's not really it doesn't come from saying, who am I going to share my power with today? It's an inner... it's an inner settling and grounding of yourself where you know you have the power and you don't need to wield it. When you are so grounded that you don't need to wield it, then you're going to share it when it makes sense. Eventually with your child, as you're gradually turning over the reins for all of their adoption-related issues and their identity formation and their any searching they want to do and what they want to do, whatever relationship they want to have with their birth parent, you're modeling for them early how to have openness, how to set boundaries, how to make this work for you. And then with a birth parent, you're if you're secure in yourself, you don't need to have that power. You can be more adoptee-centered when it's not about you. So it's this inner work that makes it not about fulfilling your own needs and your own unprocessed trauma or grief. That's when the power sharing happens. It emanates. Yeah. When you're healing yourself first, the power dynamics become just less of an issue.
I love that. The idea of grief permeates all of your chapters or all of your sections. And I really resonate with this idea of like having to heal that. And I think it's really hard across the whole spectrum to recognize when that needs healing. And I think the other difficult thing is, particularly from an adoptive parent perspective, at least from my perspective as an adoptee, is that letting go of the expectation that maybe I know best, or decentering yourself from that. How did you get to that point as you went on your journey? Was it the open adoption that you were a part of? You said you kind of fell into an easy one. Like, was it that just leading you in, or how did that work for you?
When I was a kid, one of my good friends was an adoptee from the 60s. And I never quite understood from her perspective the lack of curiosity, the lack of talking about it. I knew I would be curious. I knew I would be wanting to find answers. So when we first set out on our adoption journey and the agency introduced it to open adoption to us, I'm like, oh, that makes so much more sense, where you just know and you don't have this fantasy birth parent. And I mean, it was very selfish for me at that time. I was like, oh, good. So I don't have to do all the raising. And then when they're 18, they go find somebody they love more who hasn't, you know, set all the limits and everything. Mm-hmm. And so it just made sense. So when I met Crystal, when our daughter's birth mother picked us, I just liked her. And so it stopped being a competition in my mind. It just automatically centered on, especially after our daughter was born. And when I say our, it means all of ours. Yeah. It's like, why wouldn't we do everything we could to make her life the best it can be? I also was, I just had this sense of this either or splits the child and both and heals what was split. I mean, it's still split. I mean, they have two sets of parents, and no matter what happens after placement, they're going to have loyalties to both. So what can we do to make that split less impactful? Yeah. And that's to kind of like each other, be open to each other, and not be in competition. That competition can be just so devastating, I think, for all of us. I mean, it feels icky to hold that too,
yeah,
as an adoptive parent.
I also want to say, when we're talking about like the power dynamics too, like I personally have given up this notion that I would ever have any power. And I think like where the power transfer comes in is really transferring the power to the adoptee. I'm not getting any transfer of power, and I don't feel like there's ever going to be a balance of power between me as a birth parent and you know, them as the adoptive parents. They're not transferring power to me, but I'm also not seeking it. Sure. I'm seeking connection. I'm seeking like meaningful relationships. And so it's more of not, it's, you know how they say like, what is the thing of like energy cannot be created?
No matter cannot be created, yeah, or destroyed.
Right. But I think like with power, it's like you're just releasing it. You're releasing power and declining to seek it.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
And so, And that should be a process of giving that back to the rightful owner,
sure,
which is the adoptee.
Well, it's like you're just letting go of the expectation, of any expectation of like, I am entitled or deserve this, and recognizing like your own role or place in all of this, and that you deserve and should exist here in this place. And for whatever the reason is, you don't have to go any further than that to be secure in yourself or to be enough. Like it just is.
And when you let go of that competition, like feels so silly.
Yeah.
And and it's, I mean, that's such a period of growth too, because you're like, oh, why am I seeking power? I don't want power over my child. I want them to be whole and healthy and find who they are. You know, like I don't. I don't desire any power over him. So, yeah.
I'd like to quote an adoption. No, he's not an adoption. He's an attachment psychotherapist. And he's actually quoting his wife. This is Dr. Brad Reedy. And he says, if you show up to a relationship hungry, you will eat the other person. And I think that's what I want to say about adoptive parents, is if we show up with these gaping needs that we're trying so hard to cover up, then we are going to have trouble with power, because it's a bottomless pit that we have until we address it within those things within ourselves. And then sharing power isn't a big deal.
That's a great quote. That's the clip. That's going right out. That's going right out on social media. That's an excellent one.
Good job, Lori.
Thank you for sharing that. Sure. Dr. Reedy. Shout out Dr. Reedy. So in this idea of power dynamics, you talk about, you know, like, letting go of certain things, letting go of the competition, because the competition can be really harmful, particularly to the adoptee in this situation. And in your section, Sarah, you talked really early on about the cost. And I think I love how you talk about it, because when people think about the cost of adoption, the general public, it's about, oh, the monetary value of what this is. But you're talking about like the relational and the emotional cost that happens. I want you to answer this question, but I'd also like both of you to try and answer this question as well, if you can, to define further like what the cost of adoption is to you personally. And then if y'all have something that you'd like to define it as, I would love to hear from you both as well.
Yeah, gosh. Okay, well, there's a lot of cost. So I'm like, I'm kind of, where do I begin? It's funny, Lori and I were talking the other night and you asked me something and she said, it was something about like, if you weren't adopted, would that still affect you? And I'm like, I have no personality outside of adoption.
Sure.
So I don't know, like, you know, and it was regarding animals. I'm really sensitive to animals and my sensitivity. And I don't know, that is probably adoption. So the cost, you know, but anyway, I digress a little bit, but partly because I'm like, everything, there's a cost to everything. And some of it, there might be a good, doesn't always mean it's a sacrifice.
Right.
It doesn't always mean it's bad. In my relationships, you know, there was a huge cost that in our family dynamic and with the dynamic of adoption being closed and the closed feeling about not talking about adoption in the family, it was taboo. I kept everything secret. So the cost was that I constantly needed to prove myself. I grew up hearing this special baby story and you're chosen. And so I felt that I had to prove that out. I also lived my life performing because I felt like, okay, if I can just be noticed, if I can be big enough, you know, maybe my birth mom will find me. All the fantasies we have, I thought there were maybe birth mom scouts out there looking to report to her. And so I just have to be loud enough and she'll find me, you know? Yeah. And so there was a real cost on even who am I, because you can't even find yourself in that. There's so much noise. The cost for authentic relationships, you know, with my family, you know, some of it was their doing, but some of it was mine because I kept my true heart hidden. And so then we weren't having authentic relationships, because I wasn't speaking the truth. It was too risky. It's, you know, I'm not blaming myself either.
Right.
From my perspective, my first family went away and I better do everything I can to make sure the next family doesn't. And so I was a people pleaser. I was the perfectionist. I was, you know, all the things. So all those things are costs. And I could go on. I flatlined. I didn't want to look at the grief. So I walked around robotically saying, adoption doesn't affect me. I'm fine. I have a really great family, you know, and
did you take that from me?
Yeah, no, because I'm a Gen X. Yeah. I mean, we do it to protect ourselves. And so there's that cost of not even just being honest with ourselves. It wasn't that I was lying. I believed it. I had to survival. And it feels like, you know, when I finally took the, you know, plunge into the grief, I really thought I would never stop crying. I was this retreat and I felt a waterline and I really thought, you know, I remember this facilitator saying, are you done? And I'm like, are you joking? Like, I'm going to be here for a few months. Like, yeah. I'm just getting started. And my turn was up. I had to go, you know, and I'm still going, you know, but to feel that grief and then to realize that, you know, the cost also was my joy. Cause I couldn't, if you can't feel the lows, you can't feel the highs. And so that was a cost as well. The flatlining that, you know, life was pretty good. It wasn't like it was terrible, but I wasn't feeling the highs because I was just suppressing so much grief and pain.
The cost is also generational. Like, If I could put it visually, it's like a subscription fee that you inherit sometimes as well. Like, it gets passed down, through separated generations. And so, there are costs that we don't see, you know, cause they're not getting billed to us directly.
Right.
So
it's those hidden fees and the real fine
they
print.
They get you. That's how
know.
They get you.
Yeah. Yeah.
An exactly. invisible ink.
Yeah, exactly. You got to use like flame to make the words come up.
And then how do you cancel? Cause I'd love to cancel my subscription.
Right. Well, you got to call this number. Yeah. Well, no, you need to be over here. I'll
and
transfer
you
over here.
It's not our business hours. So
right. Exactly. Exactly. What about for you, Lori? Like from a cost perspective?
Yeah. That's a really good question. And I can only answer for myself, not for like adoptive parents in general, but I think I had to sacrifice my view of who I thought I was and who I wanted to be for who I actually am. So it was a dive into my own authenticity. Who am I? I mean, I'm still doing it. I think as long as you're alive, you're probably doing that. If you choose to do it, it's a hero's journey.
Right.
There's a benefit to it too. An examined life is very much more rich and rewarding, in my view, for me, than an unexamined life. And I think what Sarah said kind of resonated for me too. The authentic relationships and true intimacy with my kids and with my husband comes from me knowing myself better, because then they can know me too, who I really am, not what I show.
Right.
So I think the cost is pretense. That doesn't really fit with, I think, what you're saying. But for me, that was my journey. And I don't know why I would have that if I'd had biological kids. Maybe I would have, because maybe it's more about parenting than adoptive parenting. That's always a line I'm trying to look at and discern. Sure. But it doesn't really matter in the end.
Yeah.
But I think there is that extra layer of there's other legitimate parents out there. And how do you be okay with that? Because everybody else in the world thinks you own your kids, and it's just so much cleaner and understood, and you have to be okay with that share at some level.
Right. Yeah, it's the what if. Like, I feel like I've been playing that game a lot, especially after I started going to therapy, or I was playing that game a lot before going to therapy, and after coming to therapy, really finding myself. And I reached a point in 22 where I thought I found my whole self, and I was like, oh, I found self-acceptance. I'm like, oh, this is great. I feel awesome. Like, I've reached the mountaintop. And then about a year later, I was like, we were pregnant. I was just coming back from Korea, and I was feeling like I was cratering again. I'm like, okay, I think this is time to go to therapy. And I went to therapy because there's another hill to climb. And I realized that I was mistaking acceptance for self-love.
Yes.
And that, like, realization made me find a more whole version of me, mm-hmm. and understanding that, okay, there's still work to be done, and the work never stops, and to be able to continue to show up and go back to the work, I think is super important. And something that you've all touched on, the book really made me think about, is I don't know if we talk about adoption this way, but this is how I read not only this conversation but the book, is that adoption is very much a communal experience. Not individual, but we talk about it so much in the individual family, the individual adoptee, the birth mom, the adoptive parent. And I think if we could move away from, if we could as individuals know ourselves, a more full version of ourselves, and move away from that individuality in this whole system and concept and actively operate on a communal level, like, how much further along could we go from a policy standpoint, from just a narrative standpoint, from a resource post and pre standpoint? You know, it's just like, I don't know that we think about it that way. Am I reading that right? Because I don't think it was explicitly stated in the book. Like, this is community. Like, it's supposed to be community. But I feel like everything that I read, like, that's what it was screaming at me in between the lines.
Yay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You picked that up. Yeah. And that's the unfiltering. We wanted to drop the filters of what kept us separate and dehumanizing each other, especially in online spaces. And I think in real life, it's just more you're isolated and you don't, you know, you don't talk about adoption with people out in the real world unless you're in a support group or something.
So. I find it to be harder work and more unnecessary work to sit across from somebody while they're telling me about their experience and not care and dismiss it. I think it's harder work to do that. I think you have to twist yourself into a pretzel to justify it. And I think there's complexities and there's hard things, but about working together and acknowledging the power dynamics and all of that, I find it simpler to take your word for it and to honor that and to proceed forward.
Well, it's like the competitive aspect. Totally. If you're sitting across from somebody, you're like, I don't agree with any of this, and I want to now insert my opinion and get one up on you. Yeah. It's just like, that's exhausting to continue to show up.
And who has the time?
Yeah, who has the time?
Not me. You definitely don't.
Yeah, not right now. I definitely do not.
And we do talk a lot about listening for understanding instead of listening for responding, which is what you were just talking about.
Yes.
You want to win, or you want to make sure you get heard. And that happens a lot because we all want to be seen in this adoption space because we're all coming from some place of lack. But really that listening to understand without having a rebuttal, that it takes time to penetrate and get in and process. And it's a thoughtful time instead of a reactive time.
Well, yeah, especially as adoptees, like we never, and birth parents especially, like we've never had the microphone or the pen. Mm-hmm. And so when we finally get that opportunity, it's hard to not be like, well, I want to insert myself in here and make sure that I'm heard. And then when somebody has maybe a differing opinion or experience, it can be grating sometimes and be like, well, that's not mine. And now I feel like I'm being invalidated again because it's not lining up with it. And then at a certain point, for me, it's been the realization that, all of this can exist at the same time. It all exists here in the same space. And instead of going to one extreme or the other, which I don't have a problem with anybody operating there, but most of us operate in the gray space, which is where I think this book, I think you talk about it in the intro, about being like in this really uncomfortable gray space because you have to allow for everything to be true at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what is really uncomfortable for a lot of people is that all of that is true at the same time. And to be able to acknowledge that takes us that next step. Yeah. And it moves us beyond competition to communal care, communal growth, I think.
I just want to say, so that first conversation Lori and I had and why I was like, yay, you know, we joke around, like we solved the world problems and we solved adoption. And when I hear you say that, I'm like, okay, yes, like that's adoption. That's what we want. And also that's what the world needs right now. Like, so I'm like, we are solving world problems in a way. We're modeling, you know, like we need to do this in so many areas and think of community and how we affect things. I work with horses a lot, or I'm around horses a lot, I should say. I don't work with them the way I just made it sound. I'm around horses a lot and around horse people who like can be very spiritual about that. And horses pick up on all the stuff in the world and it affects the horses. It affects the trees. It affects the animals, to get a little bit woo woo. But, I do think, you know, when we model this in adoption, like it is part of modeling for the world. So let adoption lead the way to world change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's another clip.
As a system, 100%. And as a system, like it does permeate all of our stuff. Okay. One thing before we move to these last few questions, like I really loved how you talked about how the history of separation in families all the way back to the 1700s. I don't think we do that enough. That's like, if this show's about the missing pieces of the conversations we already have, like that's what I talk about a lot, is like, we don't really think about how deeply the history goes, especially as a Korean adoptee. We like, the 50s, like we always start there. And it's like, well, if we think about it, we need to be going all the way back to indigenous separation, like, and thinking about how that was happening. And even probably way beyond that, before we have written recorded history, you know, like these things were already happening. And that's how we get narratives like the ones that we're pushing back against right now, is like things just operate in the same way over and over and over again. And then it's like, this is normal. And it's like, well, it's not normal. And then those things leach into these other systems and the world. So couldn't agree more. This is the last stop on your tour of the second leg. Indianapolis, you said, we're mixed emotions. We're excited. We're exhausted. What have y'all taken away so far from all of these things that you've done? Obviously, we haven't done the Indy event yet, but like, what's been your takeaway as of now?
I'll take this one first. I have been so, for two things. I have two things. One, the adoption community is amazing, and it's filled with such smart, savvy, connected, authentic, searching, energetic people, and we get to meet them in each place. They're on our panels and they're in our audience. And I think I am surprised at how many people really want to make this better. I think there's a leg up with what we're trying to do with making this better because so many people want to. There's a lot of adoptive parents who are on board. They know that they're listening. They've heard adoptee voices. They've heard birth parent voices. And then they're just saying, so how do we do this? How do we ally? How do we make this better? They want to be better parents. They want to make it. I hear a lot of people saying there should be fewer adoptions too. And those are coming from adoptive parents. They're seeing, and it's so encouraging.
Love it.
Am I next? Can Sarah go next? Because they're still developing.
I'll go next. I would echo that for sure. I think I mentioned already just meeting up with other adoptees that I've known. I mean, just the in-person connection and it comes down to connection again. Like just the connection, Kelsey touched on it, Lori did, you did, Patrick. I mean, connection is significant in so many ways and you just never know. I had a fantastic dinner in DC with 18 adoptees.
Nice.
My wonderful colleague at Adoptee Voices, Alice Stevens, lined that up and you have conversations and, you know, just like the we should write a book, things like that are happening, just conversations right. And the next thing's going to happen. And we're change makers and we just have this, it's inspiring. I've got goosebumps as I say it, like we've got to drive toward healing. I think that is and we just do. And it's, you know, we can lament together that we have to heal and there's a place for that. And it's important. And there's also this amazing drive within us to heal. And when you get in community, you feel it and you want to work toward it and you never know what magic's going to happen out of that. And it just feels like a wave. It was really cool in New York. Susan Ito and I had coffee, but we were super sad because we scheduled events the same night in the same city.
Oh, yeah.
Like how did that happen? But also it's kind of like, that happened because two events about adoption can be, two adoptee-led
yes.
books can be held in the same city on the same night. Wow. Like who would have ever thought? And so there's a wave. And so I do feel that. I feel the momentum. I feel change. I feel hope. I also feel a lot of work to be done. But when you're out talking mm-hmm. to people who are there hungry and listening, then you do feel the hope.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, okay, there are ears here hearing it. And they're not always connected in adoption. Some of them are, they don't even find themselves on the constellation
sure.
visual. They're just there listening and going, wow, that changed my mind. I didn't know. I didn't know adoption was so complex. The narrative's been rewritten for them. So it's good to be out on the road and be a part of that.
Love it.
I think the takeaway for me is also the momentum, but in a different way. I think being like a millennial, like we haven't had a ton of spaces. And I think there's an element of, there's an air of seniority sometimes in these spaces. I'm sure that you've felt this, Patrick, because solidarity, because I encounter just being in policy too, there's that dynamic as well where people look at you and they're like, you're X age and you are so naive and you don't know what you're talking about. And I'm like, well, I'm 31, so stop talking to me like I'm 17.
Right.
And I'm motivated and I'm excited because what we're working on is working and it feels like the momentum. And in policy work, we have this thing called, we refer to the policy window and it's this, open moment where the stars align and you have an opportunity to make things work. And so it's the moment where the legislators are paying attention, the media is paying attention, the public is hearts and minds are ready for it. And that's when something clicks into place and it happens. And I feel like that momentum is that policy window opening. And we're headed towards something positive, some sort of positive reform and change. And I do think that other times it feels like a slog, like where, you know, there's a lot of hard work behind the scenes. But I, on this tour specifically, I have felt that momentum from my generation. And also just you can sense how much they crave community that is healthy and relatable to them. We have adoptees now too that are growing up that have grown up in open adoptions and they have different experiences and mm-hmm. they also want to be heard. And if we are stuck on seniority, how will we hear them? Mm. And so I want to hear those voices. And I feel like this tour has also opened us up to hearing more experiences, getting more diversity of experiences. And I'm really grateful for that. And I just want to continue to help, you know, and I want to encourage like millennials, because like we're not the youngest generation anymore.
Right.
I mean, boomers still complain about us like we
I'm
are,
pretty
but we're
sure
not.
There's two generations below us.
Yeah.
Now. I don't even know.
Yeah. So I want to, I don't want to try to claw my, a lot of us had to claw our space at the table, right? We had to like pull up our own chair mm-hmm. and fight to be heard by older generations, and still are. I don't want to do that to Gen Z, and I don't want Gen Z to do that to, what's the next one? Alpha?
Gen Alpha, I think.
I don't want them to do that. I want to model that for younger generations, because my relevance is going to last as long as it lasts, and I'm not going to grip it in my cold, dead hands.
Right.
So, yeah.
That's what kicked the competition to the curb. Competition can drive innovation, but it doesn't need to happen here. We can all work together
totally.
To do and reach where we need to go.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
I appreciate you all for sitting down, for getting out of the car, literally from Chicago, and walking in the studio and having this conversation with me. Excited for the event tonight. Last question. For people that have been listening, watching, who are here with us at the end of the interview, where do we find y'all? How do we support y'all? How do we stay in touch with y'all as we see and follow your journeys for what's next? And where do we get the book?
AdoptionUnfiltered.com. And that'll link to all of our individual places and all the ordering. The book can be found anywhere. If it's not at your local bookstore, I'm definitely a proponent. You know, I definitely advocate for indie bookstores first and foremost, but it's there that you, if it's not, if you don't see it, ask. And same goes for libraries. You can ask. Mm. So anywhere.
And on our website is also our podcast information. We're just now doing a series on adoption activists. So we've got some amazing people on that, if we're allowed to talk about other podcasts.
You are. It's not like my other show where we don't talk about other podcasts. We definitely talk about other stuff.
Collaboration, here. Not competition.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. Well, very excited for that. Again, thank you all so much for being here. I love this conversation. Excited to see what happens tonight. Excited to continue following your work. Excited to talk about this book with other people, because I think it's going to be really important. I'm going to hand it to my mom next week. It's my birthday next week. So I'm going to give it to her and be like, you need to read this. She's been on a great journey for her own, but I think this will definitely help. So thank you all for doing this. Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. Shout out to Popular Rapture, John Overton on the mic. Shout out to Mike Lee, Mike Lee Productions on the cameras. If you want, go to our website, conversationpeacepod.com. Follow us at Conversation Pod Piece on Instagram. If you want, leave us a rating or review wherever you get your podcast. That'd be great. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel, where this will be. Support Mike and all of his incredible work, because he has been churning out some really awesome stuff. I think that's it. We got some really incredible stuff coming up here on the show. Again, 2024, year of the NAP, lots of Indianapolis things happening, a lot of conversations happening here, and they'll be happening right here, roundtable recording. So until then, this has been Conversation Piece. I've been the titular Patrick, and we will see you soon.